This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you're listening to Bicycle Talk. It's July 5th, 2017. Welcome to Bicycle Talk, this week with my co-host, Fran Storch.
Hi.
Morning, Fran. And a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can call or text at 860-486-9487. Or you can email me at bicycletalk@gmail.com or visit Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you would like to contribute to or be on the show as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. I'm always looking for comments. This morning may spur a few comments, but anyway, so if you want to ring us up or send over a text or whatever, we're more than welcome. But I'm going to start out today's show with on the positive side. So on a positive side, I have to bring this up, and yes, it does have something to do with bicycles because of the reference that we used yesterday, but on a positive side, the Willimantic Boombox Parade. This is local. If you are listening to me from way across the country or even across the waters, because I know I do have listeners out there, I know this is kind of a hokey little thing, but it's not a hokey little thing. It's really cool. It's the Boombox Parade. It's in Willimantic. The local radio station plays marching music. People dress up. They do fun things, and there's always a lot of bicycles there, so that's why this comes in.
And anyone can march in it. Anyone, for any reason.
For any reason whatsoever. It's a total freedom of speech thing, and it's very, very cool. So this year was the 32nd running of the Boombox Parade, and we did a float for the Steeplechase Bike Tour, which I am often talking about here on the air. And the It's a local fundraiser. So I constructed and had lots of help and from some friends to paint it up and make it look pretty, a large cardboard steeple, church steeple, and put it on the back of my Burley trailer, and I pulled it down Main Street and got a bunch of volunteers. Thank you so much if you volunteered to show up and chase the steeple, but a bunch of people on bicycles that rode their bicycles behind me and chased the steeple for the steeplechase. So anyway, it's just a really fun thing. It's a cool thing you can do on a bicycle. It's another way that you can get out there and ride your bike. And yeah, we rode all about whopping 2 miles yesterday, 1 mile up and 1 mile back, and that was it. But it was still fun. It was still a lot of fun. So moving on, Ron's rant of the week. Well, I can't leave this alone. I just can't do it. I don't know what else to say. But if you've been watching the Tour de France, which is a really cool thing because it's very televised, and it's, although we're going to have some words about that too, it's very visible to many, many people in the world. Here in the United States, we are watching it this year by way of NBC Sports Network, which has been broadcasting for us. And I have two rants, and it's tough when you can get two rants, when two rants just get shouted at you at the same time, and I have to put it out there. First rant, NBC Sports Network. Hey, guys, stop blocking the European feed. Yes, if you try to go online, your European feed gets blocked. So anybody who wants to watch the tour other than from NBC Sports Network is being blocked here in the U.S. from doing it, and stop that behavior. Stop it now. And if anybody knows a way of making them stop it, please do, because it's just not fair. Not everyone can afford it. So not everyone can afford the extra money on their cable network to watch it that way. And so anyway, that's a bad boys, NBC Sports Network. You should know better than that. But you're going to get more from me today anyway, so it doesn't really matter. We'll address you again later. But the big one is stage four of the Tour de France was a long, flat stage. It was really boring. It was your classic, really boring, long, flat stage. It had one little bump of a hill in it, and it was just a very simple Category 4 climb, not very difficult at all. And, of course, there was a solo breakaway where a gentleman got out and rode almost the entire way, all by himself, which someone was asking me about that. Why do they do that? And it's because they get TV time. They get, the advertisers get payback for it. So that's why they do that. But it came down to a final sprint. It was a big deal. A lot of sprinters, everyone lining up for position, everyone going for the win into town. And Peter Sagan, who is the world champion, 2 years in a row world champion of the road race. So a very prestigious honor to hold, because he wears the rainbow jersey, and it's a big deal to be the world champion. Peter Sagan, in the midst of the sprint and the heat of the moment, appeared to come over to the edge of the sprint and take out Mark Cavendish. And when I say take out, I mean he moved him over towards the barriers, as did the whole line of sprinters. So we'll talk about that a little bit more, too. We can get into that a bit more. But the whole line of sprinters basically merged over to the right of the course. And as they did, Peter Sagan could feel, and I'm just going to say this from a bike racing standpoint, right, from being in a race and knowing, you have kind of a sixth sense of where people are. Even when they're behind you, you can feel them coming. I can't explain it, but if you've ever raced a bike, you know what I'm talking about. And as Cavendish came around him, or was trying to come around him on the right-hand side between the barriers, there wasn't a lot of room. It wasn't a wonderful decision. But Peter Sagan leaned his bike toward the barriers and then threw his elbow out. Now, that's the big question, is was it thrown? Was it gently placed out? Was it, you know, there's a lot of talk about this right now. But Peter Sagan, bad boy, very bad boy. You are a professional. You are an icon for the sport. You are loved by many. You have a huge fan base. You're certainly a controversial person because of your outrageous stunts that you do on your bicycle. But you are well-liked by a lot of people, and you did something very blunderous yesterday. And that throwing out of the elbow was just completely unprofessional. And I don't care how many people defend you, I am not on your side on this one. So we're going to talk about this today, because there's a lot of talk about it. And a lot of people are defending him because they like him. But at the same time, someone got severely hurt on this. They're in the midst of a 45-mile-an-hour sprint. They are flying towards the finish line. And it's dangerous enough as it is. Why would you even consider doing something stupid like that? And he didn't think about it.
He didn't consider it.
He didn't consider it.
Nothing was considered. That whole thing that happened in the blink of an eye.
We're sure
analyzing it 40,000 million times, and we're watching it on slow motion.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We're overanalyzing it 10 million times. What was he thinking? What was he doing? What was Cavendish thinking? Cavendish was thinking he couldn't. He saw a hole that wasn't there. Sagan sent somebody behind him. He defended by trying to keep the person out of his way because he was afraid that Cavendish was going to come into him. He didn't know. It was Cavendish. The whole thing happened so fast, and we're analyzing it 4 million times, and, you know, a judgment was, well, you can talk about.
Right.
Go ahead and talk about it more.
So we'll talk about it more. No, really, you know, chime in whenever you want. If you would like to call us on this, you can certainly give us a ring, and, you know, we'll put you on the air. One thing I have to say, it's a very heated discussion.
So don't swear.
Please don't swear when you call in, but you can reach us at 860-486-9487 if you're listening to us live right now.
That's 860-486-9487. I am standing by.
There you go. There you go. You'll talk to the lovely Fran Storch. We'd love to hear your comments on this. It is certainly a point of controversy. Mark Cavendish, great rider, also has been in controversial situations. Here's the thing. You know, we have this identity with cyclists and cycling, excuse me, not cyclists, but cycling and bicycle racing, that they're a bunch of, you know, crazed dopers and they do all this stuff and all that. But we'd never really ever pick on the sprinters. And I'm going to pick on the sprinters today. And this is why I'm hoping to, you know, spark some entertaining verbiage on it. But the sprinters are just, they're so alive with this idea of winning the race, which I completely understand. You're sprinting for the finish. You have a talent. You have great fast twitch muscles. You can explode explode into a speed that I will never, ever be able to attain when I'm riding my bike. I get it. I understand all that. It's exciting. It's really exciting for the crowds. Everyone loves to see a good sprint at the end. It's great. But they do things, and this is not the first time we've seen this. They do things that are not really safe. And we need to talk about that. You know, a few years ago there was a headbutting incident where two sprinters were coming into the finish and they were really tight with one another, and one of them actually flicked his head with helmet as hard as he could into the other rider to send him off course so he could win the sprint.
This is Renshaw?
That was Renshaw.
Yeah, yeah. That was in 2010.
And that, you know, that kind of behavior is just, you guys are professionals. Come on, get it together. I could see, you know, if it was an amateur race, not that I'd want to see it. I could see it in an amateur race just because you haven't, you know, dialed yourselves in yet. But these guys are on the world spotlight. They are the best of the best. And there's no reason whatsoever for them to do that. There's always another day for them. Always. But you know what? There's not another day for Mark Cavendish. Because Mark Cavendish is out. He broke his shoulder. He was put into the barrier at 45 miles an hour, and he broke his shoulder. That's what happened. He also has a lot of stitches in one of his fingers because he wrecked his finger in the process. He's a mess, and he is out for, I mean, with a broken shoulder. I don't know how long you're out for. Shoulder injuries are really tough to come out of. And
right.
He's already fighting
right.
with mono at this point, too. He just came out of that. So, you know, the only good news is that he'll get a lot of rest, and that'll maybe help with the mono situation.
Right.
But anyway, this is a disgrace to my sport. I don't like it. I get mad about it. It really bothers me when this happens. Now, you know, some things have happened here. And what has happened is Peter Sagan, after the race, went over and he found Mark Cavendish, and he went over to him and he apologized to him for what happened in the race. But, you know, they seem to be friends. They seem to talk it out. And I have a caller. Yes, caller, are you there?
We have a caller, and this is Bruce from Lebanon.
I think I'm here.
You think you're? Oh, you're totally here. I can hear you.
To the bait, Ron, and I will blame you later.
And no swearing.
No swearing, right? Yeah. So
it's IRF. It's Ron's fault.
It's Ron's fault. Of course it is. Of course it is. It certainly is my fault. It's because of my long time. I can't say hatred because I'm actually envious of sprinters because they obviously have a talent that I certainly do not. But I find them to be difficult to ride with in a bike race.
Well, it's like it's, you know, and you know this better than I do. It's like two different races. You know, I mean, it's like throwing a sprinter in with a miler.
Right.
I mean,
right. You know,
it's just they're just not going to do the same thing.
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
But the reason I'm calling, of course, is this whole issue. And I have to say that my two favorite riders in the tour for the last several years have been Peter Sagan and Cavendish. I love them both.
Right, and now they're both out. So who are you going to watch?
Now they're both out. That's right.
Right.
Well, I guess maybe I'm going to watch Bob Roll. So I don't. It's not like I have a favorite in this issue. But what I've tried to do is I've tried to see, you know, the slow motion replays, the whole nine yards, which I've seen more times than I ever believe that I've ever seen.
I have analyzed it, overanalyzed it, and overanalyzed my overanalyzing of it.
Yep. Mm. So this is what I saw. What I saw was this group of maybe half a dozen guys lining up for the sprint, and Cavendish looking like he needed a place to come through. So he decided to take a spot on the right, up by the barriers. He tried to squeeze through a space that, to me, didn't exist. So I felt like he was forcing what he was doing. At the same time, the entire group was not holding their line. And the guy who won, that he was probably the most egregious of all, if you watched him go from sort of one side to the other. But okay, so they were all trying to come through. And what I saw happening was I saw Cavendish coming up on Sagan's wheel and leaning his head to the left into Sagan, and maybe that was to keep away from the barriers. I don't know. But when I saw the replay in slow motion, it did not look to me, and other people have said this too, you know, on a TV, that this so-called elbow flick ever touched him. And I just think that it was one of these, you know, like in motorcycling, we'd say it's racing.
Right.
And I'm not saying that there isn't some room for improvement, because it clearly is. But I just didn't think, well, A, I'm sure it was not intentional by Sagan, but I just didn't think that whatever happened rose to the level of disqualifying him, Sagan. And I understand what the outcome was, but I have to look at this and make a judgment about what happened and forget the outcome for the moment. You know what I mean?
Right. Oh, Bruce, thank you for your call. This is good. We're going to have a discussion about this because I see it from a different light. And
I know.
And as I have, like, scrutinized the video over and over and over again, I know what you mean. By the fact that he was kind of leaning in that direction, I also completely agree with you on the probably didn't pick the right place to come through.
Yep.
On the other hand, if you research any of Cav's other sprints over the years, this is normal for him. He always makes it through. And
Right. And
the fact that that elbow flick that shouldn't have hit him and probably didn't hit him, mm-hmm. What you have to understand is if you're a bike guy. Okay,
yeah.
So if you're riding your bike down the road, or you're also a motorcycle guy, you're riding your motorcycle down the road, and all of a sudden someone puts a hand in front of your face when you're in a critical situation, what is your reaction?
Well, I don't know, but I
would think gross fear.
That isn't the way I saw it happen.
Yeah.
That isn't the way I saw it happen, Ron.
But the elbow did clear his line of sight completely. And therefore it made him flinch.
Yeah, But Ron, it may have, when you're riding and someone's coming up next to you, and they're leaning into you, which to me it looked like Cavendish was to try to get away from the barrier. When they're leaning into you, you have a response to that. It's an intuitive response. You either lean your shoulder in, as you always tell me,
mm-hmm.
or you put your elbow out.
I do it.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things, And when I saw the group itself kind of going left to right, you know, or whichever way they were going, squeezing each other one way or another, it just looks to me like it was not as simple as one guy taking another guy down.
And I have to
say, I've listened to this over and over again, and everybody that commented on it, whether it was Roll or Van de Velde or Jens Voigt or, you know, all of these guys, basically saying the same thing.
Yeah, they are.
And, you know, I go along with that. And I even had a comment on my research here. And there was let me see if I can find it here. It was a former bicycle racer it's Andre Greipel. Okay.
Yeah.
So Andre Greipel had made a comment about, you know, disqualifying Sagan for the move, and then he tweeted, "Sometimes I should watch images before I say something. Apologies to Peter at Peter Sagan."
Right.
As I think about the decision of the judge is too hard. So that's something that Andre Greipel said. But then I also had looked at, and unfortunately I don't have all of them in front of me, a bunch of other tweets. And if you want to go on to Twitter, hashtag disqualified Sagan. Sagan is the thing to look at. So it's hashtag disqualified and then a space and then Sagan. And you'll see all sorts of comments of different people from different perspectives, some former bicycle racers, some current, and just then some fans. And there's just a lot of discussion about this because it's just, you know, here's what I'm seeing. The excuse that came out from Sagan as you read more about it is, I was just trying to find, and you know, this is such a thing. I can't even tell you the name of the person who won the race. It's the first time a Frenchman has won a sprint in many,
right.
many years, and
right.
I can't even pull his name up because I'm more involved with this than I am with anything else, and which a lot of people are. But his claim was he was just trying to stay with him. Well, he wasn't trying to stay with him, because if you follow that line, if you look above, you look at the actual, you know, the filming from above, as Cavendish was coming through and Sagan was leaning his way over, he was actually leaning away from the rider he was supposedly trying to stay with. He wasn't even close to him, and there was a huge gap over there. The problem here is, and this is how I see it, and this is how I see it from a bicycle racing perspective, is that Sagan may not have known who it was that was coming through, but he knew somebody was coming through, because you can feel it. You can
yeah,
totally
of course.
Feel it, okay? But he sensed someone coming through, we'll call it that, okay? And he completely took his mind off of what he was supposed to be doing, and went after that person that was coming through because he didn't want to get beat out on his right side. And that is why he did what he did. Whereas if he had been following the person who actually won the race, he might have been able to win the race himself. So I think he made a very bad decision. And the flick of the elbow was just it was the icing on the cake. That was completely uncalled for.
Well, I didn't see it that way, Ron. But also, you know, when you talk about like what he was thinking, I don't know how to tell what he was thinking.
That's what I said. I said
none of us do.
All of this happened in less than a second. That's
right.
The thing. We're all watching it over and over and over, in slow motion, and all those decisions were made in fractions of seconds. He wasn't like thinking,
Absolutely.
Okay, this is how I'm going to win the race today. He's nothing. Oh, there's Cavendish in back here. He's trying to shoot the hole. I'm going to box him. He's not thinking about that. He feels somebody breathing on him, and he protects against himself and puts his elbow out. And I have to wonder if what really happened is perhaps that elbow may not have even contacted Cavendish, and Cavendish was trying to come to shoot the hole.
It didn't contact him.
There wasn't a hole, and Cavendish just hit his wheel. And that's what happened.
That's what it looked like to me, Fran.
Yeah.
I mean, it looked to me like Cavendish was trying to create a space that didn't exist.
Right.
And I totally understand that. But when you do that, you're taking a risk. And
right.
It's nobody else's fault. That's
you know,
my theory.
When you suit up, put your helmet on your head, and get out on your bike in an event like this, you're taking a risk.
Oh,
everybody's
yeah.
taking a risk. I mean, that is certainly true. You know, the cycling news here, I've been reading everywhere about this, and cycling news has, should Peter Sagan have been disqualified from the Tour de France? And they say, heck no. And they went on to say, online opinion can't save him now. Peter Sagan was disqualified from the Tour de France
yep.
on Tuesday, which means the race will have to continue without one of the greatest ambassadors. And
yep.
that is true. That is arguably a true thing. Not to mention that the two guys, as you were saying earlier, that really are one of the reasons why you like to watch the race is you
Absolutely.
Want to see those guys race against you. They're both out. They're both
yep.
done. And that is that's really unfortunate for the Tour de France. That's a very unfortunate situation.
Oh, it's horrible.
But let's go back to, and if Fran can figure this out and find it, I was trying to Google it up this morning, but there's a rule in cycling, in racing, when you are, and I was trying to find this UCI rule, where if you are involved in a sprint, in a sprint situation, and you're going hard and strong, you are to maintain a straight line while doing that. They
right.
all violated that.
To me, that's the larger point. Just putting the Sagan, you know, Cav thing aside for a moment, the larger point is what some of the commentators are saying. These guys, the sprinters, when they get up there and they go for it, there's no rule except I get across first.
Right, exactly.
You know, that's what they are, you know? That's what they do. And so for me, it was like, okay, if the governing body wants to take an action, do something about all of these guys.
Right.
Because to make an example of one guy is to me, really not fair. I didn't think whatever happened on Sagan's part rose to the level of disqualification. And if it did, there's several other people that should have been DQ'd as well.
And yeah. What they could have done, and unfortunately for Arnaud Demare, would have been to just neutralize the sprint, just neutralize the stage.
Right.
How so?
Right.
Neutralize,
well,
meaning that the stage doesn't count.
Well, here we go. Here's a piece right here, and this is from Cycling News once again. And yep. It says right here, deviating too much from your line, on the other hand, often risks the wrath of race judges, with the punishment usually being relegated to last place in the group and a time penalty, which was the initial punishment that was meted out to Sagan in this case. So that's what they originally said to him. They originally said, you know what, you're going to get nothing out of this. You're going to the back. And we're not gonna give you any points. We're not gonna give you any extra time. Nothing at all. That's it. So the question here, it says, did Sagan deviate from his line? Sure, a little. As he moves to try to get into French champion Arnaud Demare's wheel.
Right.
But there's my argument. If you look at the overhead footage. Okay, if you look at that, and it just says it right here, that he tried to move to get on the French champion's wheel, he moved in the opposite direction of his wheel. And he was, and when he moved in the opposite direction, he closed out Cav's line even further.
There was no line, Ron.
Well, there was, I've seen him come through that hole so many times, I'm going to tell you, there's a hole there. There is a hole.
Well,
it wasn't much. I would not have made that decision. You would not have made that decision.
Correct.
These guys are pros. They make these kind of decisions all the time. I still think it was a bad decision. I think that Cav kind of, he met his own fate. So, you know, he's responsible for as much of it as not. But I think there was just, there were other ways of doing it, of handling it. And it obviously, you know, this is going to be a something that is studied for a very long time and discussed for a very long time. The UCI race commissioners took a closer look and then they dropped the hammer. Sagan was out having seriously endangered some of his colleagues, according to a race jury president, Philippe Marin. Not only had Cavendish crashed, but the knockout effect had also taken down compatriot Ben Swift and also John Dickenglob. Both will continue to race, but will do so with injuries that are sustained in the crash. And if you saw that, they actually ran into Cavendish, and they were immediately ejected off their bicycles. Bicycles and riders flying into the air.
Endowed.
Yeah, big time. And, you know, they came out clean out of that deal because that's, I hate to say it, but that's a clean way to crash if you're going to crash.
Listen, here's a hypothetical I would like you to consider.
Sure.
I know that this does not really happen this way, but what if Cavendish came up the right side and actually got far enough up the right side and contacted Sagan, as he did?
Mm-hmm.
And Sagan went down, and Cavendish didn't. Would Cavendish be out of the tour?
Well, that's a good point. That's a really good point.
Because the fact is, that's exactly what Cavendish did. It just didn't have the same result. The result was a bad one for him,
right?
And not for Sagan. But he was trying to force a situation that, I mean, you know, I look at it sort of, I'm the layman, you know. I know a little bit about motorcycle racing, but that's about it. And I can tell you right now, if this happened in a motorcycle race and somebody came up on the inside of somebody and forced them out, that would be a big problem for the guy who came from behind.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's a problem if we're on a group ride and somebody passes you on the right with not a lot of space between you and the road. But, you know, people do that. It's not a great place to pass on the right.
Yeah, well, I agree. But this is obviously a little different because these guys are just, they're just wound up. They've been riding all day to get to this moment.
And they're riding at 45 miles an hour, and the levels of hormones that are flowing through their bodies and brains between the testosterone, all the androgens, and all the cortisol, they're in fight or flight. I mean, we talk about they're on steroid. They literally are on steroid. And I don't mean they're taking steroid drugs. I mean, the steroids in their bodies are over the top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No question about it. At that point in the race with these guys, being who they are, with the skills and abilities that they have, there's only one thing, and that is I'm getting across that line first. Everybody else, get out of the way.
Yes.
So right, right.
That's, but somehow I do agree with the overall assessment, which is somehow that's got to be reined in because people are going to continue to get hurt.
Right, yeah.
Okay, so I have another perspective here for us because No, this is good.
All right.
So, because I put the shout out to some people because I'm curious as to, you know, how people are feeling about this.
Right.
And so I contacted our local professional racer, Amber Pierce.
Oh,
and
yeah.
she's a professional woman cyclist,
yep.
And she's involved in situations like this all the time. So anyway, I said, hey, what do you think? And so she just texted me back. I just got a text from her. And she said, hey, yes, I'm back, because Amber has actually been away at the U.S. Pro Tour, and
right.
She's just back in town now. So that's really cool, because maybe we can get out for a nice bike ride with Amber. Shout out to Amber Pierce. Yes, she's back. If you get this while on the air, I don't think Sagan should have been DQ'd. Cav was going to a space too small, and he knew it. He took that risk. Sagan was taken off guard, and the elbow was self-protection and to regain balance. Those guys are aggressive, but don't pull intentional dangerous moves like that, because those moves put them at as much risk of injury and quickly erode their reputation as sprinters, which is as important to safety and success as their actual skill. So that's from Amber Pierce from Mansfield, Connecticut, who is a professional bike racer. She thinks that it was wrong also. So there's a lot of people that are looking at it from different perspectives. This straight line thing is certainly a concern. I'd love to have even more conversation with her about that, and probably will at some point. And then there's another text just came through. Always support officials making calls that prioritize rider safety, but in this case, the DQ was unwarranted. So
that kind of sums up where I'm at.
Yeah, yeah.
And by the way, I don't even know Amber Pierce, but one more reason to love her. As far as I'm concerned.
I love hearing it from people like this, and I can't wait to present this to my friend Tyler Wren, because he raced professionally, and you know,
right.
I'm working with him for the Farm to Forks, and I'm sure we'll have some interesting discussion about it, because it's just, you know, it's such a tough situation, because it's a dangerous sport, and to add more danger to it, it just is a problem. Now, should they have taken the whole group and said, hey, you guys, none of you held your line on this. What about the line rule? And what about that line rule? I want to know more about that. I couldn't
yep.
seem to really locate a lot of information about it, but I know that that is something that the UCI judges look at. They look at the fact that once you're involved in a full-out sprint, you got to hold that line. Now,
Absolutely. Is
holding that line weaving back and forth across the road but not making any really sharp turns, or is holding that line trying to keep it straight all the way to the finish line so somebody doesn't get hurt? Another comment back from Amber. Trust me, if the riders believe someone is pulling dirty moves consistently enough to warrant a DQ, the Peloton will make sure that guy doesn't get near the sprint. And there you have it.
That's
it's true. There's a thing amongst bike racers that when you're put on the bad boy list, they're gonna make a way. They're gonna figure out a way to make sure that you are not available to do the thing that you have been doing in the past. And that is kind of a lovely thing about the sport and how it all works. It's really kind of fun. But yeah. Thank you, Amber. Really great. It's great you're listening.
Listen, I'm going to get off so you can get on with your show. But,
okay.
But thank you for raising the issue, because it's one of those things that I think it kind of like spurs an interest in what's going on, and it spurs an interest in cycling, and it's just something that needs to be talked about and gets people, you know, motivated to look at the tour, for instance. So,
well, you know, if nothing else, you're stating it. We're all talking about it right now. It's
yep, exactly.
It's brought out something, and it's way better than what was being talked about with, you know, Lance Armstrong supposedly stealing seven Tour de France's.
Right.
So, you know, that's another issue in itself that we can deal with. But anyway, So it's pretty cool. I mean, it does. We are all watching the race now. We are all participating in the discussion about this. There's tweets, there's emails, there's text going back and forth, and we've got a discussion going, which is really cool.
Yep.
So this is really, really fun that we're doing this. So we're going to keep watching the tour. I know that I just got a text from another person who follows this very closely, and I just got the answer for today's tour, which I didn't want to see, but that's all right. Thank you, Scott Carter, for letting me know, and that's fine. But he did this for me for the Giro too, when I didn't get it televised and I was on the road working all the time, so I was actually getting good updates from him. But he's in my camp on this, by the way. We were having constant discussion yesterday about this as we went over and over it and scrutinized it and watched it and watched the the footage as it kept going and going and going. But anyway, so again, different camps, different ideas. I can't wait for some mountains. Give me some mountains. Let's go to the place where the tour is famous, where the legends have been made. Let's get out of the sprinter camp and start, getting back into the Tour de France and the Tour of Italy and the Tour of Spain and all the good races that I love so much, because it's where the chess game begins. It's where everything starts to happen, and we all get a great piece of entertainment. And we got some stuff coming up. Like today, we've got this incredible. They've got a wall at the end of the.
I saw that.
Of the race. And yeah. Oh, you did. Okay. Don't tell me anymore. I don't want to know, but I'll watch it later. But, it is what they call it, the plank or something like that, I think is what Froome called it. Riding up the plank. I think
it
was.
But it's a 20% grade.
Oh, it's ugly. It is just ugly. And it's going to be, it'll be fun to watch, but I can't wait. I just can't wait.
So let's go ahead and let Bruce go so someone else can call.
Okay.
Thank you so much for calling, Bruce. You contributed
a lot.
Thanks, Bruce.
We'll see you soon.
We'll ride with you soon.
Okay.
All right. Good.
Take care.
So anyway, different camps. It seems that more and more camps are going towards the Sagan should not have been disqualified from the race. Maybe he should have been, time penalized for it, or, pushed back so that he wasn't even in contention. And that's a possibility, too. So that's another thing that we can do here. There was to throw him out completely. I'm with it. I'm with it. I'm sorry. I saw it differently. I've been in tight situations before. I've had guys actually grab onto the seat of my bicycle and try to pull themselves through in a really tight crit. And it's just, it's just uncalled for. Now, I was also touched by doing that. So when someone makes a physical contact like that, that's an issue. That's definitely an issue. And you probably don't want to do that. And I probably shouldn't have done what I did, because I just swung back and hit him. But, you're going real fast and you're in a tight situation and you don't want to go down, and you've got all these people that are crowding around you, and it's a tough situation. You get very anxious when you're in that situation. So you want to protect yourself to a certain degree. But anyway, thank you for everyone who's commenting and watching. Apparently, I have a piece in front of me. It looks like Fran put her phone up in front of me, and people.
You're on
actually,
Facebook Live right I'm, now I'm on, in my account.
I guess I'm on Facebook Live right now on Fran's account, which is cool. Which is cool. So hello out there to everyone who's watching. That's very nice. This is the tour is the tour. It's a great thing. And Sagan has, he's accepted his disqualification, but he's still denying no wrongdoing. So he's there with that. Cav, let's see. There was something here. They're friends. They know each other. They work with each other. I look at this as it's not just that they're racing bicycles against one another and they're competitors. They're actually working with each other every day. This is their job. This is what they do. They're out there. And you can have some problems with some people at work, and other times you can actually have, good times with people at work, and you can talk about the things that you did and the different sprints, and hey, remember that day when and all that. You know, Sagan spoke to Cavendish after the crash and again apologized before going home. However, he made it clear that he did not agree with his disqualification from the Tour de France. And he says, "What can I do? I can just accept the decision of the jury, but for sure, I don't agree with them because I think I didn't do something wrong in the sprint." And anyway, because obviously he's been getting hit with a lot of reporters and a lot of things. But the one thing that Cav said, and I remember, I don't know if I have it right here, but there was a Cavendish reaction after the incident. That was from a different one. But anyway, he said that he certainly, you know, understands the whole situation and all, and you know, he accepts the apology of his friend who, you know, obviously got him into a whole heap and bunch of trouble. But he also said that you know, he still has to have discuss with him about that elbow. So that elbow was, you know, that was just the final little flick. I get the elbow thing. Here's the elbow thing. When you're side by side with another rider and they're in so tight with you that your handlebar is on their handlebar and you feel like you might have a problem with going down because you're about to hook handlebars or whatever it is that's going on, and you're in enough area so you can actually contact that person and you slightly move your elbow out, that's how you hold your space. That is acceptable. But to flick the elbow at 45 miles an hour, right in front of the field of vision of that rider, that's not a good thing. And if you take a look again at the footage from up top, you're going to see that that there was a whole lot of room for Sagan to go over to the left. There was a whole bunch of room. And if he was truly on his mission to claim the lead from the person who won the race, he should have been over there. He should have opened that gap. And that's kind of what Cav was looking for. And, you know, some days you get lucky and some days you don't. What is it? Some days you're the windshield and some days you're the bug. Well, unfortunately, you know, Cav was the bug that day. And this happens. It's bike racing. But anyway, there's just a lot online about this. And I'm sure that the race commentators were probably having a big discussion about it. I got a little upset yesterday when it seemed like all the NBC boys were all just completely behind Sagan on the whole deal. And, you know, it takes two to tango. And you can't discount the fact that a couple of crazy hyped up guys made a couple of bad decisions. I think there were two bad decisions made here, not one bad decision. And I think that's what we should be looking at, is that, you know, there needs to be, I don't know what there needs to be. I don't know how you change it. Do you enforce the straight line rule? Do you take the whole front group out because of that? I mean, what do you do? Because the straight line rule is so it's so strict when it is enforced that as I read earlier here, you're out of the race. They're going to move you to the back of the pack. They're going to move you to the back of the group that you're with, basically, is what they're going to do. So then, you know, who wins the race? You know, they're going to have to look at the cameras. They got to figure it all out. But, you know, that's tough. That would have sent a strong message, though, for the sprinters to get their act together and stop playing around like that and playing with each other's lives. And, you know, I don't know what the answer is. I really don't. But obviously, some of us see it some way. Some of us see it the other way. I'm still in the camp of I think Peter Sagan got a little too cocky on this one, and it was a bad idea. Mark Cavendish got a little too cocky on this by trying to shoot the hole. There's, you know, everybody's guilty as charged. Should Sagan have been thrown out? I'm going for it. Yeah, I say yes. That's my answer. It may not be everybody else's opinion, but my opinion is that, you know, to put somebody in such a violent situation and crash that he breaks his shoulder, it's just, you know, he could have killed him. I mean, let's look at this from reality. He could have killed him. That was bad.
He could have, but if he hadn't put his shoulder out, it's still possible that because Cavendish was trying to shoot the hole, Cavendish still could have touched his wheel. And at that speed, would have had the same outcome. I mean, we don't think that Sagan even contacted Cavendish, because contact came from Cavendish coming up behind and touching wheels.
Right, but contacting his wheel from behind only puts the rear rider down, not the front rider.
Right. That's who went down.
So, and I realized, but he didn't hit his wheel. He hit a barrier because he had no more room.
I see.
That's what he did. Okay. But, you know, if he had come by him and been on his side and they had contact there, there could have been a problem for sure.
Yeah.
But until that front wheel makes contact with another wheel, that rider is probably not going down. Now, not always, I will say, not always. I've seen situations. And, you know, if you have a rider that rides so far into your rear wheel that they somehow get their front wheel tied into your rear derailleur and your wheel, there is a great opportunity for both riders to go down there, for sure. If the rider comes up from the back and they come up really strong and fast and they get their handlebars entangled within your handlebars because they're too close to you there, both riders are going down.
Yeah, sure.
There's no question about that. But front wheel to rear wheel, front wheel always dies. It always goes down. The front wheel is always the person in the back. And this is where the ruling gets a little twisted because, you know, if you look at it from a position of, well, you know, kind of the unwritten rules of the law of cycling, if you're riding in a group, is, you know, the person in the back is always at fault. It's kind of like when you're driving your car. If you rear end someone, who's charged?
Yeah.
Not the person in front that may have stopped short for something, but the person in the back who wasn't paying attention and therefore gets charged for it. That's the way the laws work on moving vehicles. That's just a moving vehicle thing. But it still brings up a very interesting discussion as far as the race goes. And, you know, we're going to have better things to talk about. I know we are. It's going to get better. It's a great race. It's a great time. I am like thrilled with the people that are watching this and being entertained by it. And I think that's the end game here, is that we're getting some really positive, you know, feed from cycling and bicycle racing and people interested in this. I came into spin class this morning and I had two people just barking away at me. Hey, what'd you think? What do you think? You know, let's see what Ron says about it. The discussion had already started before I even walked in the room. And so we went at it and we talked about it and they went, oh my God, he's going to kill us in spin class because he's all fired up. And they were right. They were right. It was a tough class this morning. But anyway, you know, this is bike racing. It's what happens. It's the Tour de France. There's going to be more excitement.
This is going to be discussed for years.
Oh yeah, this'll pop out on a feed another year. Well, there'll be another controversial sprint, and they'll relive footage of this. And you know, this is gonna happen for a while. So you know, it's a situation. It's a tough situation. I really don't know. You know, how to resolve it in any way. Would it be best to say to Peter Sagan, hey, sorry, you know, you can come back now? That's probably not going to happen. It's over, it's done. And it's unfortunate because we just took two very very outspoken and very prominent riders out of the Tour, riders that a lot of people like to watch and really spend their time watching, because and realize that, you know, they're turning on the television or they're going to the internet to watch these two guys, because these two guys are outstanding personalities. They're well spoken. They're in the public eye. A lot of people like them, you know, and everybody has a story to tell that goes along with them. So we just lost two riders. That's a shame. That's a real shame. It's always a shame when you lose a rider, whether you lose them there or you lose them on a sharp. I mean, we lost Valverde in the time trial the first day. Why did we lose him? Because he slid out on wet paint on a very, very difficult corner that possibly should have been hay baled and not crowd barriered. But, you know, what do you do? What do you do? These things happen. It's bike racing. Anything can happen. And, you know, who are you going to blame on that? Well, you know,
wet paint,
and maybe he went into the corner too hot. I mean, that could happen too. There's a lot of things that could have been there, but they knew that was a bad corner. They were having problems with that corner before. As a race promoter, and I'm going to stick my neck out on this one, but if I was in that situation as a race promoter, if Valverde was obviously one of the later released riders because he's up there in the tour. So if they had a few other riders that had crashed in that same spot and it was apparent that that was going to be a tough situation, I mean, that time trial went through a city that had a lot of good thing for cyclists and for pedestrians. There was a lot of pathways that are marked out on the road, a lot of share of the roads and different things that are out there. But that paint is like ice when it's wet, and not so good for bike racers when they're barreling through there full steam. So if they saw that, or if I, as a race promoter, had seen that spot as a particular issue, I would have rushed out. I would have got on my walkie-talkie, and I would have said, I need hay bales there. Move the crowd barriers out of the way. Somebody's going to get hurt. And then Valverde would not have a fractured kneecap from that situation. So, you know, I mean, it's over. It's done. You know, it's a done deal. Valverde being out of the tour, there's another discussion. That's a big one, because he rides for Team Movistar, and he was the second in command for their star.
Yeah.
And so now he's not there to help in the mountains, and he's a great climber. He's not good climber. He's a great climber. So having two climbers on that team in the mountains at the same time, that was critical. And he's no longer with us.
Yeah.
So that's unfortunate, too. But, you know, this is bike racing. This is what it's all about. And you know, I have a couple of more things to just run by real quick before we close the show. And we'll discuss some other things later on. But I just want to remind people of a few things here. First of all, continue to watch the Tour de France. We're still on until July 23rd, 2017. So we have still got a lot of racing ahead of us, and we've got a lot, many more stories to tell. So there's going to be a lot going on there, too. We're going to be working our ways into the mountains here very soon. We've got a big wall today that they're going over. Let's move to a little bit more local. I've got the Thread City Cycler Century coming up on Saturday, July 29th, 2017. And that is 102 miles, 84 miles, 66 miles, and 43 miles. So there are a number of different rides you can do. You can go to the threadcitycyclers.com for more information. There is also the Steeplechase Bike Tour coming up on Saturday, August 19th, 2017, a 5-mile walk and or ride, a 20-mile ride, 35-mile ride, 50-mile ride, 62 and 100-mile rides, all to benefit some very good local causes, so definitely a good thing. And, of course, our friends over at NERAC Earth are putting on the new Ashford Metric Gravel Grinder on September 16th, 2017. So support your locals. And Fran, you have something for me?
And don't forget that this Saturday, July 8th, is the Erase Ride. Everyone ride, run against cancer every day. It will be this Saturday, July 8th. It is rain or shine. And right now the online registration is closed, but you can register the day of. If you would like to ride 100 miles, the ride start is at 7 o'clock a.m. There is a 50-mile ride that starts at 8 o'clock a.m., a 25-mile ride that begins at 10 o'clock a.m., and there's a 10-mile technical mountain bike ride, which begins at 9 a.m. There's a 5K runner walk that begins at 11 a.m., and the Ferrari Concorso will be there at 10:30 a.m., So pre-registration, check-in, and registration will open 1 hour before your event start time. So it is, you do have to register on site at this point because online registration is closed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, but it is a great event. I'm looking forward to it. I'm planning to do the Century Ride with my friend Cindy and my friend David, and that'll be really great. And it's a nice route. Lots of people are going to be there. You get to ride in some of the Tobacco Flats, and you get to do that great climb up to the Granville store. And it touches into Massachusetts.
Yeah.
So it should be a great day.
Yeah, it should be a great day. So that's a nice local event. And it's always good to support it. If you go to support it, tell them you heard about it on Bicycle Talk. That's always cool.
Yeah.
So my name is Pedalin' Ron, and you have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch. a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. Remember, you can always reach us by calling or texting at 860-486-9487. That is when we are live. Or you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you would like to contribute or be a part of the show as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedlin Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.